Welcome to the Bengals Wire podcast. I'm your host, Cameron Zargar, and I'm joined by the editor of Bengals Wire, Chris Rowling. Chris, tell us a little bit about your background and then a little bit about the site.
Yeah, so Cincinnati born and raised, went to LaSalle High School and then went over to Ohio University. I've worked in digital media for about 11 years now. I was brought on as the managing editor at Bengals Wire last August, and we've been rolling around since. And in the interest of making the best possible Bengals website on the internet, I brought on someone such as yourself.
I appreciate that. Yeah, I'm a PhD student at UCLA. I was born in Cincinnati, raised in Northern Kentucky. I've been writing for Bengals Wire for a few months now. And Bengals Wire is a site that's, I think, is growing really fast from what I understand, right?
Correct.
And it's a USA Today SMG Wire site. They're on Twitter and Facebook, and you can just go to bengalswire.usatoday.com to find our articles. Today we want to talk a little bit about the Jeff Hobson article. And Jeff, though a brilliant writer, is obviously a representative of the Bengals. So most of the time, his articles are informative, and he gives us kind of like a insight into what's going on with the Bengals. But some of the time, you know, when the Bengals kind of make questionable moves, he still has to defend them. And a lot of people are kind of upset about this recent article. Wouldn't you say so?
I would say so. You know, I looked up to Hobson for a long time in the local industry, and, you know, he's doing his job. And the nice thing about his content at Bengals.com is he has a really, really ear to the ground there, and he understands the moves, and he explains the moves, and he tells you why they're doing what they're doing, for better or worse.
Yeah, and, you know, it's... So the Bengals, obviously, for instance, we're just coming off the Super Bowl, and one of the most important players in the Super Bowl was a guy the Bengals drafted, Jake Elliott. Now, it's not so much that you know, a former Bengal went to succeed another team. It's that this guy was a rookie. They spent a fifth round pick on, I believe, and he showed great promise even in the preseason with the Bengals, with his ability to hit really long field goals. But I think he was a little bit inconsistent, perhaps in practice or on the extra points, things that you'd expect from a rookie. And the Bengals were coming off a 6-9-1 season, so it's like, you know, they're not in a position to be thinking about winning right now. And the ironic part is that even if they were, the guy just won the Super Bowl, so he was good enough for that. So that kind of move is just one that it didn't make sense at the time, let alone now that he's a Super Bowl champion. Nonetheless, Hobson said, you know, the Bengals got ripped for drafting Jake Elliott at the time, you know, ahead of Zane Gonzalez, but he ends up being an MVP candidate for the, you know, Super Bowl champion Eagles. In other words, he's defending their draft-making skills, even though the real kind of thing he needs to defend is, okay, why did they make this personnel decision? Why did they stick with the kind of the complacent choice in Randy Bullock?
Yeah, you know, Elliott's an interesting conversation because he ended up on the practice squad and he went to Philadelphia and he missed something like 10 or 11 kicks during the regular season, but it didn't really hurt him because Wentz, an MVP contender, had him, you know, winning all these games anyway at a nice margin. So, you know, it's one of those situations where the Bengals probably could have rolled with the upside, but they chose not to and stuck with Randy Bullock. And it's kind of silly now to kind of bash the team for it. But you understand it, too. It's one of those situations where both sides can be correct, and I think they are. You know, overall, though, it's interesting because I think what Hobson's pointing at is, you know, the Bengals are making good drafting decisions, and he's trying to say they don't need a bigger player personnel department, and he's pointing at all these players who are going to succeed elsewhere, and he's trying to suggest that the real problem is player retention, which is something Marvin Lewis even hinted at in his end-of-season presser when he said we need to do better at going and getting other free agents. So, you know, it's just a strange way of pointing out that the Bengals have problems with keeping the right guys.
Yeah. You know, another thing, obviously going back a little bit further, that Bengals fans were really upset with was keeping Marvin Lewis around for his 16th year. And I personally, up until about 2 years ago, I didn't think Marvin Lewis was the problem, which might sound strange to people, but I just, you know, I thought the Bengals franchise is too much to overcome, and I thought he brought us so far, and he's, that kind of shows that he's one of the few people who can even take us further. But it's, you know, sometimes it's just about change, and the Eagles are a good example. Andy Reid was a great coach. He took them very far, but it's just time for a change, and we see the results. Tony Dungy in Tampa Bay, right? They move on to John Gruden. John Gruden is not a better coach than Tony Dungy. You can't say that, you know, in any certain terms. But he was the man for the job at the time. And, you know, so even Marvin Lewis is technically a better coach than the guy who would have succeeded him. It was time for a change, right? Now, how does Hobson defend this move in his article? He says, you know, if this thing, you know, because people, look, the criticism of Mike Brown is that he doesn't spend a sufficient amount of money to put a quality product on the field. Not quality, but a true contender, let's say, on the field. And the response that Hobson gives is, if this thing were dictated by economics, Mike Brown would have blown up the whole damn thing after last season, hired the annual hot name coordinator as a head coach for $1.5 million per, and that guy would have hired 20 coaches with the average age of a supermodel and dressed it up as a bold new era to sell tickets on billboards and social media. That would have been the comfortable thing to do. And then he says, but he did the much tougher thing, which is to bring back, you know, a veteran coach or a guy, you know, who's been around. Of course, we don't know coaches' salaries, so we don't know what Marvin Lewis is being paid. But I can guarantee you that the hot name coordinator is not making $1.5 million per year as head coach now. Let's say Patricia or, you know, what the Colts were going to offer, McDaniels or those kind of guys. And I don't know about the supermodel comment. I don't know exactly what. Well, I think that just meant, yeah.
And this is a little backwards. I mean, the comfortable thing is keeping Marvin Lewis and going for it again.
You know, right.
You think the AFC is kind of weak, which it was, and you blew that opportunity. You think the AFC North is kind of weak moving forward. That's fine. You bring him back. But, you know, you can go back to the Eagles and talk about how they kind of went outside of the good old boys club at head coach and got Doug Peterson and won a Super Bowl. So it's one of those things where both sides can be correct and wrong, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it does, but because he's talking about economics, and I don't know what they're paying Marvin Lewis, to be honest with you, but whatever they're paying him, we have to keep in mind, and this is what Mike Brown does, Marvin Lewis, you know, has more than one position with the team. So, you know, you pay, if, you know, they have these coach GM guys, and they get right. paid.
Duke Tobin.
No. What I mean is some teams will have their head coach be the GM as well.
True, yeah.
Like, as an official position. Right now, I'm not sure, but I remember, you know, the former Green Bay coach who went to Seattle, for instance, Mike Holmgren, for instance. That's just one example I remember, where they paid him as a GM as well. So even if they're paying Marvin Lewis, let's say, above the average head coach salary, and part of that is because he's doing more than one job. So my point is that the logic is flawed in my mind. Not only that, but like I said, the $1.5 million thing, I think that's precisely why he doesn't want a new one of the reasons is that these hot name guys are going to want to get paid like a top 10 coach, if they, you know what I mean?
Right.
Because they have there'll be 5 or maybe 10 sometimes vacancies, and most of them will be interested in the hot name guys. So
well, and this is what the Bengals do with economics, right? You know, they spend money and they throw out these figures when it comes to players so that they can chart right. on top 10 spending lists, but right. they're not spending properly.
They're not spending on coaches or scouts or facilities the way some of the top tier franchises do.
Well, and even in player personnel.
Right. And, you know, one thing that's been kind of brought up is the fact that the reason that we can't go after other teams' free agents is because we don't have sufficient knowledge of them, because we don't have sufficient scouting or, like you said, player personnel evaluation of some of, you know, who's on other teams and how they would fit with us. And so they're more comfortable with signing their own guys. And this brings us to another comment in the article where it was mentioned, you know, why do we let guys like Zeitler go or Whitworth? And I think the person who wrote the question said something like Zeitler finished as the 12th best guard. And, you know, Hobbs says, well, that's not that high up, even if that's true, which it is, because, you know, every team has to play 2 guards, so he's the top, you know.
Right.
But nonetheless, he was on the Browns. I mean, so you have to take that into account. You know, you play as a team, and, you know. And we saw, you know, for instance, bowling this year, Zeitler last year. their PFF grades would go down, perhaps, or their, you know, their rating, because they were all oftentimes, you know, shifting their assignment to help out Bodine,
yep,
or to help out Obwehi or whatever, right? No, at any rate, we all know Zeitler deserves to be paid. He's a good quality, you know. And Whitworth obviously clearly has, he had this year in him as a top five tackle, and he probably has another year or two in him as a top five tackle, but that wouldn't really fit with Brown's kind of approach to paying people. Anyways, so letting them go was something that still bothers a lot of us, and
as response,
as it should. And the response that Hobson gave was with Dunlap, Atkins, Darquez, Denard, Nick Vigil, Tyler Croft, and Tyler Boyd on the horizon as free agents. In the next 2 years, they'll need the cap space, right?
Right.
So Dunlap and Atkins, personally, I agree with. Because even if they decline, I don't, you know, I don't expect the Bengals to win a Super Bowl by the time their contract, their next contract expires. I kind of like the idea of having these Bengals legends, even though they'll never be honored by the team, you know, in a formal ceremony or anything, sort of ring. But Atkins has a shot at the Hall of Fame, I guess, maybe you could say, right? I think
so. You could start saying that, I think.
Yeah. I mean, okay, how about this? If they have two decent playoff runs, maybe AFC, you know, maybe even a Super Bowl appearance, let's just say, and Atkins continues at this level, I think he'll get a lot more, you know, Hall of Fame attention. Dunlap, he's going to be one, you know, he's, I think these guys are top three in all-time sacks, right? Or top, maybe top two, right? The top two
sack leaders. Well, in franchise, absolutely.
That's what I mean, yeah. So yeah, that means something to me. As the fan of a team that doesn't have, you know, like six Super Bowl rings or something, right?
Right.
Denard had a solid year. And you need slot corners. That's like a, you know, essential position now. And he's good enough, and he's young, and he's going to improve. And I remember when he was coming out, everybody was saying, you know, Lewis was raving about him as one of the, you know, best corner prospects he's ever coached. I think even the best, he said, rookie corner prospect. And this was, you know, after he had guys like Leon Hall and Jonathan Joseph. So anyway, so Denard has talent, and he's getting there. He's getting, you know, it's showing at the NFL level now. Nick Vigil, I don't feel like there's going to be a competitive market for him. Tyler Croft, I like Tyler Croft. You know, just thinking as Mike Brown, he's going to be, you know, command half the salary of Eifert, and he's going to play twice as many games. So hey,
bring him
I'm
back.
Fine with Croft. Bring him back. Boyd, you know, I actually like Boyd his rookie year, and I was kind of confused earlier this year, and I think he was just going through some personal things. He kind of showed up late, but again, you know, I don't think that's going to be a hugely competitive market, you know, because let's be honest, LaFell's still under contract, right, next year? So LaFell's going to, you know, probably be the starter, at least to start the season. You know, John Ross, they're going to try to get him involved. I think Josh Malone showed something, he's going to get involved. So what does that make Boyd? Like, at best, the third and a half?
Bit of a project.
Yeah. Right. So how much money do you need to re-sign your fourth receiver?
Well, I mean, the whole list is interesting, right?
Because right.
And, Nick Vigil's yeah. in there for some reason, and he's probably, if I was drafting, he'd be replaced this year.
Right.
You know, Boyd, you have Ross in front of him. Josh Malone looked great. I wouldn't bring back LaFell, but that's, you know, why I'm not running a football franchise, I suppose.
No, I don't think they'll bring back LaFell, but they're going to let him finish out his contract.
Right, well,
but yeah, with Vigil,
contracts run out in Cincinnati, so...
So what someone like Vigil, what they would do is, let's give him the lowest end starting salary for a linebacker and have him start for another 2 years. We'll draft someone who's going to be more talented, and he'll sit for those 2 years, and then Vigil, you know, that's just kind of the cycle they go through.
Right.
So same old with the Bengals, you know, the way they operate.
I'll be interested to see how Dunlap and Atkins plays out, because I can't imagine they get both under contract this offseason. Extension wise,
yeah.
Well, they would almost bet a franchise tag happens after next year for one of them.
Well, remember, there's only going to be so much money left after they give Bodine his new contract, and that brings us to another interesting topic, where Lewis said that we want to do everything in our power to get Russell back. Uh-huh. So Russell Bodine. So we're talking, you know, whatever he wants money wise, probably like a no trade clause. You know, he probably gets a stake in ownership or something. He says, Russell's been physically, mentally a tough player for us. I think the mental part is that he's been dealing, you know, he's been able to fight through all the criticism and just keep playing. He was installed there as a rookie, and he's done nothing but continue to grow and get better and frankly grow into a guy you can count on to help lead the football team. I feel really good about him. So leading the football team as the worst starting member of a football team really is an accomplishment. Wouldn't you say so?
It's an interesting quote, right? Because he doesn't say we want him back as a starter. We just want him back. It's got to be frustrating for fans, though, because this is a really nice center free agent class, and it's a really nice draft for offensive line as a whole. And you have interesting guys on the roster right now who didn't get any playing time until the final 2 weeks who could maybe slide over as well. So, you know, it's funny kind of hearing all the chatter about how things are starting to change because they revamped the coaching staff underneath a 16th and 17th year head coach now. But then the next week he turns around and says he wants one of the worst starting centers in the league back.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I mean, if they're thinking about moving him to guard, which I think that'd be too creative and imaginative for the Bengals to do. But I guess I'd be open to that with, you know, with Pollock coming in as the new O-line coach. Maybe he has a better way of using Bodine. You know, maybe Pollock is, look, because, you know, the Bengals have some guys like, let's say, Obwehi, who was drafted in the first round. And let's say Obwehi was drafted by the Cowboys and he did great. Maybe people would have said, you know, oh, the Cowboys do a great job of drafting O-linemen, whereas it could have been due to the coaching of Pollock. I'm just saying.
Right.
I'm trying to be optimistic here.
Obwehi was a better guard prospect than tackle prospect, honestly.
Right. So maybe Pollock makes something out of these guys. I don't know. Maybe we don't know. Maybe, like, it's hard for us as fans to determine what part of success is due to coaching, what's due to the player's skill set, or, you know.
Well, and this loops back to just keeping Whitworth, right? Because they looked at their line after he left, and they threw the most athletic guy they could find at left tackle.
They threw the guy who they spent a first-round pick on and was cheaper and younger, and they were just like, you know, this is obviously an obvious decision. I mean, look, if a team's trying to win, they're not going to say, let me give Obwehi a shot over Whitworth. Maybe, you know, he has a higher ceiling. Maybe he's, I mean, there's such a big disparity in terms of their play.
We've got to be evaluating different things than the coaches are, because they know how Andy Dalton gets when he's under pressure. Why take that risk if you're trying to win?
Right. And so, speaking of Obwehi, at least Marvin Lewis is a little bit, you know, disappointed in him. And we know, and, you know, I mean, this quote is good to see from him, a little bit, you know, and being kind of straightforward about it. But we have, if you remember, I think it was year before last, where they would kind of start him and sit him and bring him in the middle of the game. He would kind of, you know, take a break. So they were showing their lack of confidence in him early. So he says, Seth's had two seasons, basically, and it's just not exactly where we need it to be. That's held us back. You know, Pollock is not, you know, he's not the guy who drafted Obwehi. He's not tied at the hip with the way Alexander felt he was. So, yeah, he could, like you said, move him to guard, maybe bring him off the bench for a while. Maybe he needs another year or two to develop. I mean, who knows?
Well, and the coaching conversation is interesting because we kind of have this next point outlined. I'll let you roll into the running back situation here.
Yeah, so Jermyn Hill in social media, you know, I hate having to rely on social media, but that's the state of journalism today. Jermyn Hill signaled that he's leaving the Bengals. Now, he's also shared his affinity for the city of Cincinnati, and, you know, he loves his teammates. And he had great success as a rookie year, as successful as a rookie running back can be, really. It seems that the team is not interested in him, and rightfully so, because if he were to come back, he would be the very best. He'd be, you know, third in terms of carries, behind Mixon and Gio Bernard. But the question is, with Jermyn Hill moving on, do we think that our running problems are going to be solved? If we all remember that game against the Steelers where Joe Mixon got hot in the first half, the first game against Steelers. Mixon, the team was doing great. We were up. Mixon had like 7 carries for 49 yards, something like that. He had about a 7-yard average per carry. He didn't get one carry in the second half. And, you know, this was when Lazor was still kind of new to the coordinator position, and everybody was like, you know, why did you do this? And Lazor, who I like his personality. I like that he's got a little bit of kind of attitude to him. You know, he's not a company man.
It's a moxie, yeah.
He's got some moxie. And he's like, I don't make those decisions. And Oops. That, for a Bengals organization...
It's a peek behind the curtain.
Exactly. That doesn't reveal much at all. It kind of like... That was important because it's like... So Marvin Lewis decides who plays and who sits. Even though Lazor's the coordinator, I don't know who's the play caller in that scenario. We could say it's Lazor, but somehow Marvin Lewis gets to decide what personnel is out there. And maybe Lazor calls the play. But at any rate... you know, and another a similar thing would be, you know, we'd have games where, you know, Dalton was just disastrous, and a lot of teams might bring in McCarron, especially the situation coming up for McCarron, where the Bengals, they seem somehow like they're just in love with McCarron, and they don't want to let him go, but they don't want to play him so long as they have Dalton, but they don't want anybody else to have him. It's a very strange relationship.
Oh, they don't want to hurt Dalton's confidence.
They don't want to hurt Dalton's confidence.
And outright they don't want, before drafts, they say, we're not looking at the quarterback position.
Yeah, and they want McCarron to retire a Bengal? I mean, I don't understand. Like, they're really trying to hold on to him. It's not even about leverage, because, you know, if it was about leverage, they wouldn't have waited till, what was it, like 3:55 or whatever to pull the trigger on that trade with the Browns. Like, they waited until 5 minutes before, and they finally agreed on a first or a second and a third, right? Second and a third.
Yeah. It's, you know,
so,
state of Ohio loves McCarron, so.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I totally understand the mentality if I'm the Browns, because I think when you have a losing franchise that has struggled to develop a quarterback, they've gone to, you know, since Tim Couch, you know, since the Browns, the second kind of, you know, existence of the Browns, they've gone through 20-something quarterbacks, I think. And
is
a lot of them
really
had...
existing, though?
Sorry. What's that?
Is it really existing?
Yeah, but they've had guys with arm talent, with physical talent. You know, even DeShone Kizer, look at some of his throws. Look at some of his – he's got some real talent.
I still really like him.
I like him. I like him. But the thing is, and I hate the stereotypes about the Browns, but there is something about a mentality of a franchise. And the Bengals are not the Browns, but they have certain limitations because of the kind of losing mentality of their franchise. But anyways, if I'm the Browns and there's a guy with this kind of uber charismatic, I don't say uber charismatic, but in terms of winning on the football field, this uber competitive personality, a Tom Brady-like personality in terms of, you know, you can see him even in the preseason, he's kind of like shouting, he's getting excited, pumping his fist, right? He's more emotional in a good way than someone like Dalton. I can see how you want a guy who's going to whip some guys into shape. He doesn't have to have this huge arm or, like, you know, be super fast. He just kind of has to have some of the leadership skills. I think that a guy like McCarron could get them to 8-8, 9-7, something like that, you know, if you put the right pieces around him. So I understand the Browns' approach. But going back to the Bengals, so they have this McCarron with, you know, this impending free agency, and there's a chance that he could win the arbitration, which is coming up real soon, I think.
Yep, on the 15th.
Yeah. There's a chance he could win it. They'll lose him for nothing, or except a compensatory pick.
Well, they'll get their big old comp pick.
Yeah, which they love. But that'll be like a third rounder if he gets a big... I mean, the best it could be is a third rounder, I think, right?
Something, yeah.
Yeah. If he's a restricted free agent, maybe they sign him to a first-round tender. Maybe get a first rounder for him, but I don't think that's what they're holding out for. I think they really want McCarron on their team, but they're kind of, you know, hesitant to they were hesitant to play him last year. And again, I think maybe I'm just guessing here. Maybe Brown is attached to McCarron or likes McCarron, and Lewis in his conservative mentality of who he puts out on the field, is like, Dalton is our guy. We're gonna stick with Dalton. Just like, you know, Hill kept getting carries way beyond, you know, the time he should have. You know, even though Mixon demonstrated he's much better, and even before, we knew Gio was the better back.
Yeah, I think it was Brown. It came out that Brown was the one who wanted to give him a starting opportunity somewhere.
There you go.
Which is interesting because, you know, you're trading away a potential, and I'm doing the finger air noodles right now, but a potential franchise quarterback that you're going to have to play twice a year. So I don't know what that says about McCarron. I don't know what that says about Brown, but you can make some implications.
You know, let me give you my psychoanalysis of Brown as someone who's never studied psychology and doesn't know Mike Brown. I actually think he kind of has a heart. Like, no, I don't mean that. I'm not trying to imply he doesn't have a heart, but business generally is heartless. And in a heartless industry, like, let's say football, I kind of feel like he was like, I like this McCarron guy. You know, I want to give him a chance for him.
Right by him. Yeah.
Not for me. Like, I feel like, of course he wants the second. Of course it's like, well, why do you need the third round pick and not just the second? Yeah, why? Because he's Mike Brown. He loves, you know, value picks and all that stuff. I mean, he still loves good deals. But what I'm saying is, why did he even agree to come to the negotiation table? Is kind of, he's like, you know, maybe I should give, you know, it's okay. His motivation obviously was his intentions were half and half. Half, I want the draft picks, but half, I kind of want to see this kid succeed somewhere. I feel bad for him. You know, he's kind of rotting on the bench. Yeah, because, you know, look at Brown. Look at his history with Adam Jones, with Chris Henry. He's shown more of a heart than other owners.
He's a good guy. And in regards to that, he's misguided in what he looks at and why, you know.
He's not only that, but I hate to say it, but heartless franchises are much more successful. Look at, you know, Belichick and the Patriots, right. You know.
Look at Malcolm Butler right now.
I don't know. I don't even understand what happened. Anyways, that's a different topic. But I think
with Brown, the problem is he's still, you know, he may have a heart in that way, but from a football competitiveness standpoint, he's comparing himself to those Browns instead of to those Patriots. He doesn't want to. He's terrified of going through the '90s again, and so he is happy with the Andy Dalton product on the field right now because it's not the '90s.
Yeah,
but you're not going to win a title unless you look the other direction up the standings.
Yeah, I mean, Dalton is a regular season quarterback, you know, non-prime time, non-Steelers. It's pretty evident. It feels like anytime we win one of those games, it's like, it's always like stuff is just going wrong for the other team, or we're just kind of getting lucky, or it's like a lucky bounce here or there, or the defense gets
Don't play the lottery. Yep.
And it's very clear that, you know, Dalton statistically, for instance, is better than a Nick Foles, Joe Flacco, those kind of guys. Eli Manning. He's better than all those guys. But all those guys have showed in the you know, under the brightest lights, that they have the guts and the toughness and the kind of the play style. Because Dalton is like, you know, snap it, get it out within 2 seconds. Well, guess what? When you're playing a you know, in the playoffs, everybody's, you know, it's been a long season. Pass rush is a bigger factor. Teams have more time to game plan. Guess what? You can't just rely on, you know, getting the ball out in 2 seconds. So what are you going to do? You're going to step up. You're going to take some hits, throw downfield, take some risks. And Dalton has demonstrated, I mean, he's 30 years old. He's never going to be that.
Well, it's that and the coaching. I mean, they knew what Dalton was coming out of college. He was a 4-year starter, I think. You know, he wasn't going to change much. He just put up a season where it looked like his rookie numbers again.
That's a good point. I mean, that's part, you know, that kind of reflects on our ability to develop players.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, there's a reason Dalton was a second round pick despite a pretty, you know, pretty great college career. You know, he won the Rose Bowl, I believe. And you know, he lasted the second round. Obviously a little bit undersized, you could say, and obviously the limited arm strength. But yeah, I mean, it's also play style and personality and that kind of stuff.
They had the right idea, and they got the anomaly of the 2015 season, and then the injury. That was that year, correct? And then, you know, now they're going to try to reach for that again, and you have to hope that the new coaching staff is going to do it the right way, but you still have Marvin Lewis up top, the guy who says that, you know, Jeremy Hill is going to teach Joe Mixon how to run. So,
see, this is the thing. So, right, and so Lazor said, I want to make Dalton uncomfortable, right? Hugh Jackson said stuff like, you know, I want Dalton to be more outspoken, things like that, but it's never quite the rhetoric that Lazor used. Now, if Lazor is given a little bit more freedom, let's say, because Marvin, maybe, who knows, maybe he really is on his way out, like maybe this 2-year extension is like it, but, you know, it maybe Lazor is given more call, you know, more freedom over who gets to play, and he wants to make Dalton comfortable. I do see McCarron as more of a Lazor type quarterback. And I know people will kind of laugh and say, oh, look at, you know, he hasn't looked good. I love this argument. He didn't look good last preseason. I mean, anybody who says that, like, honestly, like, and he did kind of actually look good late in the preseason and late in games in preseason, late in the halves, when, you know, but I mean, he's playing with, look at some of the guys, if they didn't make the team, most of the receivers he was throwing to. But anyways, but if you look back to that Pittsburgh game where he struggled really bad in the first half with the rain and a fumble, I think he had an interception, but late in the game, just his mental composure, look at some of the third down and fourth down conversions he made, and then, you know, almost Nick Foles-esque, if I'll be so bold to compare him to Nick, Super Bowl MVP Nick Foles, my point is those are exactly the kind of plays that Dalton never seems to make. We have the Boyd touchdown and ball, you know, against the Ravens, that was more of an anomaly, you know, kind of things broke down, it was a nice nice read. But before that play, or any other time of the season, we have all those fourth and game where Dalton's throwing it away. Where, you know, I saw McCarron late in that game, and he benefited from great field position, but he did convert a lot of big downs late in that game. And I just think that someone like Lazor knows that, and knows that, you know, if we want to make it to the next level, maybe we need to shake things up. We need to make Dalton uncomfortable. Doesn't just mean like, hey, Dalton, practice harder. Because, you know, we know about Dalton's work ethic. We know about his work with, these throwing coaches. I can't remember their names right now. Adam. The main one was Adam Dedu. It's like a French last name. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't recall, no.
But anyways, the guys that Brady and them work with. And I think Luck is working with them now. So Dalton puts in the work. So what does that mean, making him uncomfortable?
Well, you know, I don't know, but hopefully not too uncomfortable. I'll bridge the gap with you a little bit on McCarron. I think there are some good traits there. I don't like him more than Dalton, but I see what you're talking about. And with, you know, Dalton, it's a scary proposition to make him uncomfortable, because we saw him uncomfortable this season, and he threw the ball away on fourth down twice with the game on the line. So.
Well, you know, there's different types of discomfort, right?
Right.
So 2015, that was when he had that breakout year. That's when he was uncomfortable in terms of not in terms of his offensive line, which was this year and last year, but in terms of pressure, because he had the disastrous 2014 season. He was booed at the softball charity game, and then it's like nothing to lose type thing, and Hugh Jackson's like instilling this confidence in him. Right? So he made him uncomfortable in that sense, and that worked to our advantage. But when Dalton's uncomfortable in the pocket, he's a disaster.
Right. Well, you have to have, you know, 2015 is the perfect circumstance. I mean, Tyler Eifert actually played football games.
That was a huge factor.
Yeah, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu went on to be very good contributors elsewhere, regardless of why and how they left. You know, that was the kind of the perfect combination. So, you know, He was uncomfortable in a sense, but I mean, a lot of quarterbacks I think could have stepped in on that squad and done well, which is okay. But you know, it's one of those things where if Lazor makes Dalton uncomfortable enough to succeed, he might be the next head coach of the Bengals for a decade or so.
Yeah, I mean, I was saying months ago, I'd rather have him over someone like Paul Gunther, or, you know, just from what I know about him in terms of I want someone who has a voice, his own voice, and isn't such a company guy, you know, and Lewis is, you know, very charismatic, you know, smart football mind, all that, but he's fine with, you know, going along with Brown's, you know, approach. And I don't know.
The job might be, you know, there for him to compete for in a couple of years, but
yeah,
I think that's another reason they targeted Terrell Austin from Detroit.
Terrell Austin definitely. Terrell Austin, I think, you know, he has the charisma to be a head coach for sure. People love him. He makes good use of a lot of his players. Yeah, I think those two have a chance, because let's be realistic. Every Brown hire, other than Marvin Lewis, every head coach that he's ever hired has been an internal candidate. So it's likely it'll be Austin or Lazor. There's a good chance of that, unless maybe someone like Vance Joseph is made available again, because he would basically be an internal hire.
In a sense, yeah.
Yeah.
See how he does with the quarterback market this year, too.
Right. Yeah, his job's on the line. But, okay. Well, Thanks for joining us for the first podcast of the Bengals Wire. You can find us again on Twitter, Facebook, or BengalsWire.com. Chris is always busy keeping you informed on the most recent Bengals news and a lot of great opinion articles on the site. Any final comments, Chris?
No, just stay tuned to the website. We're going to be having some more writers come on. We're going to be covering the draft. We already are covering the draft. We've got the combine in a couple weeks. Free agency's coming up. So we're looking forward to bringing you the best Bengals coverage possible.
All right. Well, we'll see you guys next time.